From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Coming up later on the show, we're talking to multidisciplinary artist Akiko Ostlund about her new work in progress. It's a theater piece called Racist Hotline. We'll talk about how she's putting it together and what she's doing during her residency at Lanesboro Arts. That'll be interesting. But first, philanthropist Mackenzie Scott is donating nearly $500 million, $436 million to be exact, to Habitat for Humanity chapters across the country, including a $2 million contribution to Habitat for Humanity of the La Crosse area. Joining us from Habitat for Humanity La Crosse area is its executive director, Kaya Fox. Kaya, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra.
Two other Habitat chapters active in our listening area that we're talking to today are Habitat for Humanity Adams County and Habitat for Humanity serving Winona County, Minnesota. From Adams County, Executive Director Stacy Palke joins us. Stacy, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
And from Winona, Executive Director Amanda Headland. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you, Ezra. It's a pleasure to be here.
This donation came as big news a month or so ago when Mackenzie Scott donated $436 million to different Habitat chapters and to the parent organization as well. Starting with you, Kaya, talk about how La Crosse found out about that donation and that you were part of it.
Oh, it was a lovely surprise. If you read up at all about, you know, Mackenzie Scott's giving, she is just a true philanthropist in the community. And so this was a kind of out of the blue phone call in which we were told that there was this $2 million donation from Mackenzie Scott going to be made to our organization, you know, and it was just, you know, your first reaction is that this has to be a scam. There's something going on here. But we were able to find out that it was a true testament of the work that we do in our community and also Habitat as an international organization. When $2 million showed up in our account and we get to sit down as an organization and figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to impact housing in our community based on that lovely, beautiful, amazing donation.
So we'll talk in just a moment about like how just the idea of such a huge attention-grabbing donation can affect all kinds of efforts for Habitat, but specifically with you in La Crosse, once you picked your jaw up off the floor and figured out it was not some sort of international royalty email scam trying to get you to, you know, give them all your money or something, how do you go about figuring out how to take such a chunk of funding like that and put it to work in our area?
Well, I think the most important thing is that we have to make sure that, you know, as we're approaching how we're going to spend the funds, that we stay really true to our mission and the needs in our community. You know, safe and affordable housing is Habitat for Humanity's mission across the entire globe. And in our community, what are our affordable housing needs? And then how can we strategically make sure that we're addressing the greatest needs in our community, but then also able to use this influx of funding to kind of maintain those programs as we go forward. So, you know, we don't want to kind of be the guy that wins the lottery and the money's gone in a year. We really want to use this as an investment in our community so that as we grow programming, as we help more people, as we address the greater housing needs that we see in our community, that is, this is something that we as an organization can maintain going forward and can be that resource for folks in our community that are struggling every single day with housing.
That's Kaya Fox from Habitat in La Crosse. Joining us from the Winona chapter is Amanda Headland. The donation that we were referencing doesn't happen to be coming to your organization directly, but it's intended to help alleviate really what is becoming a housing crisis as people are having a really hard time finding entry into home ownership. Housing prices are going up. All of these things are putting a strain, and people who are left in rental situations are in a situation where just a huge percentage of their income is going to pay the rent, and so it's harder and harder and harder to save up for the down payment you need to convince somebody to lend you money and get into an actual homeownership situation. Talk about this housing situation right now and how Habitat is trying to stand in the gap to offer a path to homeownership for people.
Yeah, you're so right, Ezra. And you know, there's nothing like a pandemic to shine a light on the need for affordable housing. when everybody is called to go home and to work from home and to school from home, and you don't have a home that works for you or a home that you can afford or a job that you can step away from to fulfill those responsibilities, the pressure of unaffordable home is more pronounced than ever before. And in Winona, 1 in 10 people is struggling with housing costs that exceed 50% of their income. And that's just not the income in their paycheck, that's their gross monthly income. So when you're walking around the grocery store, how many people is that you see that are struggling to put food on the table because their housing is so expensive? We know too that in Winona County, there are more than 1,000 units of affordable housing options needed just to fill that most basic need for people in the extremely low income category. So when we talk about a housing crisis, the numbers are startling and they're big, and it's a lot for all of us to take on. It's going to take partnership with city, county, state, businesses and nonprofits all working together to make sure that people have the safe, stable, affordable place to live that they deserve and that they need.
Stacy Palke is with us. She's executive director of Habitat for Humanity at Adams and Juneau counties in Wisconsin. And Stacy, I referenced earlier the supply chain issues and other things that are causing different building costs to rise and rise and rise. How does that affect an organization like yours?
It affects every bit of our organization, right down to utilities going up and having the affordability for us to be able to build a home, as well as once we sell that home to a Habitat family, for them to be able to afford the home. The supply chain itself has really put some delays into our building progress, where we're not able to get the supplies that we're needing, so we're being held up. Builds are taking longer than much more than expected, up to almost a year longer when we're waiting on trusses and floor systems for nearly 6 months at times. And that puts us behind very bad, that we are trying to move forward and just literally are not able to. We're stuck.
Kaya, when you start planning a house, everybody thinks, oh, well, you got a bunch of volunteers doing the work. Must not cost that much to build a Habitat house. What financially goes into putting one of those houses up?
So, you know, even though we have an excellent, wonderful group of volunteers that helps us build on houses, there's quite a bit more that goes into a house. You've got your land costs, you've got your utilities, your hookup costs, your infrastructure, and then also, you know, you still have to pay for the materials that go into building a house. And so as Stacy was talking about, you know, we saw almost 100% increase in our prices for some of our materials. So we started a house actually and had a pick list prior to the pandemic, and they told us our costs were $45,000. When we actually went to build the house, the material cost just for framing and the basic stuff you get from the supply company, it went up to $79,000. So when you amortize that across, you know, 6-7 houses that you're building a year, you know, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars in additional funding you have to try and find in order to kind of just maintain the level that you were doing pre-pandemic. And, you know, when you're an organization that understands there's massive need in the community, you know, and you want to do more, that just becomes a harder hill to climb.
When you are working with that new homeowner, do you have to pass that cost on to them? I'm not quite sure how it's determined how much the new homeowner pays for their home. Does that cost get shifted over to them and make it even harder for them to be able to afford it?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Ezra. And Habitat for Humanity International sets their home prices based on the actual appraised value of the property. So it's not necessarily the construction cost, but when you see your housing markets go up so much, just to give you an example, you know, the cost of living in 2021 went up 5.9%. The cost of wages went up 4.5%, but the average price of housing went up over 11%. So we just are growing that gap between what people can afford and what houses are worth on the market. And so when you sell the house to the homeowners, you're selling it for the appraised value. And when appraisals are going up because the market's doing great, which is wonderful for some people, but for, you know, moderate and low income families, that makes it harder and harder for them to afford the houses. So what we have to do as nonprofit organizations is find ways to get subsidies and bring in additional dollars, partner with other organizations to try and bring the mortgage payment down for this family into a level that's affordable. Now, the beautiful thing about Habitat is that we offer our loans as a 0% interest loan. So that really helps the families. But with the housing market soaring, even that 0% interest loan isn't cutting it anymore for low-income families. So we have to find creative ways to find mortgage packages that can work for our families and still maintain that level of affordability for them.
Amanda, a number of people may be listening, hearing us talking about loans and charges to the homeowners, and may have assumed that because Habitat asks people for donations and works a lot with that, that they give homes to deserving low-income people. Such is not the case. These people work on the homes that they eventually live in, and they buy them. Tell me about the process of how you work with your homeowners and what's required of them as part of this process.
Absolutely, Ezra. So in order to become a Habitat homeowner, people do need to work 325 volunteer hours on a Habitat home site or somewhere else in the Habitat arena. So we have sometimes people take shifts in our ReStore. Sometimes they spend time writing thank you cards or baking cookies, or we'll set them up with a painting project. So in all kinds of ways, people support construction and the Habitat mission through their volunteerism. I think their favorite is always when they help to build the house that they're going to live in. And I can tell you, I had a really delightful moment with a Habitat daughter who was standing in her future bedroom. And she had written, "Welcome to Vinaya's room," on the stud that was where her door was going to go. And that to me continues to be one of my favorite moments in Habitat, was seeing this little girl experience her future bedroom for the first time and the pride that she had in that. So part of preparing a family for home ownership is helping them experience that home construction piece, where they learn how their home is built and what kind of responsibilities they're going to have for maintenance and upkeep and operating the house once they live in it. We also work with them through a series of classes that go through eating on a budget, managing their finances and making healthy financial decisions, how to be a good neighbor and things like that, so that they're ready for home ownership, which is a new experience for so many of them.
Stacy, when these people are getting ready to move into these Habitat houses, how many of them are not only for themselves in their first home ownership situation, but perhaps even first generation homeowners? Maybe their parents or even their grandparents never owned a home before.
That is correct. Yeah, it's a huge accomplishment for every single one of our homeowners to sign, the mortgage documents and have that be their home. It is, Amanda said, my favorite part is handing the keys over at the closing table, because they have worked so hard, so many hours. They have gone through so much just to get to that point. And that is a point where they'll always remember. But then it goes forward from there is, maintaining home ownership. Then they turn into homeowners that are paying a mortgage on a monthly basis and doing their landscaping and everything else that goes into home ownership that will continue that pride of home ownership throughout many, many years.
Kaya, I've lived in several cities around the country and have watched different Habitat organizations build in those areas. And one of the things that I observe anecdotally is that often the areas that where Habitat homes are built are areas that end up being really rehabilitated because of the presence of those Habitat homes. I'm wondering if the houses end up in those areas simply because those are the areas where the more affordable property is, or is there like a rehabilitation component to your organizational strategy where you're actually trying to move into neighborhoods that need an uplift like that?
Oh, absolutely. The thing that I love about Habitat for Humanities across the nation is that we're part of an international organization, but at our true roots, we're truly community grassroots organizations where we're truly, working within our community, working with other nonprofits, elected officials on what are the individual needs in that community. And so one of the things that we work at individually across all Habitats is, where is the need for affordable housing in your communities? And so we work directly with the cities and the counties and other municipalities to identify neighborhoods that need that support. And so we don't just kind of willy-nilly buy houses. We actually have a very strategic plan on where houses need to go. And we work with our communities on finding properties that fit with that, because home ownership isn't just about the individual family owning a home. It's truly neighborhood revitalization, economic mobility for a community to have the development of nicer, affordable homes in your community. They make them more attractive to employees and employers. And so you really, it's not just about finding a lot and putting up a house. It's about thinking about where those needs are, where it would make the greatest impact, and how can you work collectively within your community to identify and address and grow as a community as a whole, not just with the families that we support.
We're talking to Kaya Fox, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity La Crosse Area, Stacy Palke, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity Adams County, and Amanda Headland, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity Winona, which is in Winona, Minnesota. And I'm grateful for them being here. And of course, we always want to hear from you on Newsmakers. You can email us anytime throughout the week at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our conversation continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin Bureau. We're talking about Habitat for Humanity today and their work throughout our listening area. Joining us are Amanda Headland, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity Winona, Stacy Palke, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity Adams County, and Kaya Fox, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity La Crosse Area. And I'm grateful for all of you joining us today. Kaya, I am interested to hear about an upcoming project that is specific to the La Crosse area, but I can't see a way that's possible that anybody in the sound of my voice can't just join into this kind of activity. And it's a thing that you've got going on called Neighbor Day. Tell me all about Neighbor Day. What is it?
Absolutely. So just like I said, each habitat, we address the needs in our community, and some of the work that we do as individual habitats centers around neighborhood revitalization, and Neighbors Day is just one of those types of activities. So it's scheduled for April 23rd, which is coming up in just a short amount of time. It is where we bring together over 400 volunteers to help over 200 elderly and disabled residents within the city of La Crosse get their yards ready for spring. So we rake leaves, turn garden beds, trim shrubs, wash windows. For those folks who were able to maybe do work on their homes and no longer find themselves able to do so. So it's a one-day event. It's actually been within the city of La Crosse for over 30 years now. It's just a great day. 400 volunteers in and out, over 200 residents helped in one single day. We feed them, we provide them with all the implements of destruction that they need to get the projects done. But it really is a cornerstone event in the La Crosse community. We had to cancel the event for the past 2 years because of the pandemic. So we're really hoping to make a big splash this year and that we get enough volunteers to address the needs and the folks who sign up for assistance. So we are looking for volunteers to help with Neighbors Day. If you are interested, you can go to our website at habitatlacrosse.org to sign up to help. And you can even put together a team. And it's a great family-friendly event. And I've been checking the weather, and it looks like April 23rd is supposed to be a lovely day.
You talked about the variety of different things that people will be involved in. Should people plan on committing all day, or what if somebody wants to volunteer for a couple of hours, or what should they be prepared for?
We ask folks to commit the day, but we do know that our lives are busy. So if volunteers need to check out a little early, we will work around that. We just hand out multiple projects to the teams that we put together. So there's usually still plenty of folks left around to get all of the projects completed. So if you only have a half a day to commit, you or maybe your family, coworkers, friends, you know, by all means, sign up to help.
So if somebody is perhaps in a part of our listening area outside of La Crosse proper, and I can't think of maybe an elderly neighbor or somebody who needs a little help keeping up, who wouldn't welcome a knock on their door to say, hey, could I clean out your flower bed for you, or could I rake you're leaving. You don't need a website or a volunteer program to be a good neighbor and to celebrate Neighbors Day, do you?
No, absolutely not. And I think that's the whole point of, you know, neighborhood and community programs, is that at the end of the day, you're just hoping to inspire others in the community and the surrounding areas that, you know, there are people out there that need certain help. And if we can highlight it through the Neighbors Day program and inspire others in other communities to find out those neighbors in your area that need some extra help and to reach out, it's a really simple thing to do. It's a lot of fun. We've been cooped up inside for far too long. Let's get out and help our community.
And Stacy, I'm interested in hearing from you. I know it's not Neighbors Day in your neck of the woods at this point, but what else are you doing through your volunteers with Habitat as far as outreach into your community?
One thing that we do is our primary laborers are our area high schools, Mauston High School and Adams Friendship High School. The advanced construction courses are our primary laborers. So they're they're in the community every day. They're talking to their friends and their family, and they're able to spread, you know, all the great things that they're doing on the house builds through conversation. And that's really cool because parents talk. And so our word is out there, you know, it can always be more, but we don't have any summer events planned this year. We're holding off, but mm-hmm. we'll be back full power next year.
Well, what an amazing educational opportunity that becomes. I mean, I know it's a rewarding experience for anybody who volunteers for a Habitat project, but what an amazing educational opportunity to have people who are actually learning about some of this stuff as part of their academic work to be able to come out and work on a house that somebody's actually going to live in, and now they get to spend the rest of however long they're in town driving by that house going, I helped on that one.
We hear that from former students that have shown their spouses or whatever, you know, I built that house. And it is really cool. And like Amanda was saying, there is always a place in the house that the students sign something and say, you know, welcome to your new home, or, you know, whatever their message is to the new homeowner. It is hidden in there.
That's great. And Amanda, what about in Winona? It's Neighbors Day coming up in La Crosse. In Winona, what other outreach opportunities are there for Habitat volunteers?
You know, we love the Neighbors Day concept, and we do a lot of similar work. Sometimes we'll get together with the Cotter Catholic School Group to do yard work, and we'll either do that in the spring or fall of each year. Winona State students and St. Mary's College students, they come out too, and they help with those projects. And then we also have a real strong repairs program where we're out there repairing homes as well as building them. And so this year in the month of August, we're going to have a Rock the Block event where we will bring together over 200 volunteers to, similar to Neighbors Day, get together and do some much needed repair work on homes. And it's a really beautiful event that we're pulling together because the interfaith community, the interfaith committee is involving churches and people across a variety of faith backgrounds to provide the volunteer work and the volunteer spirit behind that. So in addition to Rock the Block, we have repairs going on all summer long. Construction season is already underway. We'll be building wheelchair ramps, replacing roofs, propping up porches that are falling off, really stabilizing those structures. And we do repair work inside the home too, for people who are living with a disability or are struggling with some of the changes that aging can bring.
I know another opportunity for people to support Habitat is by shopping at the ReStore, and I know all of you have Habitat ReStores in your area. Kaya, let's give people an overview of what is a Habitat ReStore and what are they going to find there.
So Habitat ReStores are just a really beautiful, unique fundraising arm of Habitat for Humanities across the United States. And ReStores are physical locations where we get discounted and donated items to our store, and we sell them to the public. So we have home furnishings, construction materials, bathroom, electrical, plumbing, housewares, all at 50 to 75% off retail. And those items are, you know, donated to our store. We sell them to the public. It changes constantly because we get donations every single day. So it's just a very, very unique store with pretty much something for everybody, from your treasure hunters to your DIYers to your home repair folks. There is something at the ReStore for you. And then the beautiful thing is that all of the proceeds from every single item that is sold at the ReStore then goes back into our mission at Habitat for Humanity. So no matter whether you're donating, whether you're shopping, it's a win-win for you and your community when you shop at Habitat ReStores.
Now, here's the time where I get to put all of you on the spot. So think about this one. I know I've been to the Habitat ReStore in my near my home quite often, and I'm always intrigued by quite the mix of stuff you find, everything from those construction materials to little tiny household kitchen items that you might not have ever assumed. What is the, quirkiest, is that the right word? The most fun, the weirdest, the awesomest, the coolest little thing that you've ever found at the Habitat ReStore? Who wants to start?
Oh, I've got a really great one.
Okay, go ahead.
So it was kind of like, think about the leg lamp that you saw on,
from the Christmas story?
From the Christmas story. Only it was a three-legged stool. And then it also was covered with blue jean denim for the top. So it was a truly unique item. It actually stayed in our store for maybe an hour before it was sold. So there was definitely somebody who fell in love with it pretty immediately and took it home. So
three legs on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not strange at all.
Nope.
What about Stacy or Amanda? What about discoveries at your Habitat ReStores? Stacy?
Golly, some of the neatest stuff, and some stuff we actually have to look up and go, what is this? But like Kaya was saying, it's those weird things that fly out the door that you're, oh, nobody will ever buy this. I can remember this bright orange 70s couch come in, and we're like, what are we going to do with this? Do we put like $20 on it, just to get rid of it? Someone came in and like $500 for that couch. It was somebody that came up from Madison and thought it was the greatest thing. We never, ever thought it would even sell. And they thought it was the greatest thing in the world. So you just never know what kind of treasure hunters are out there. You just never know.
That's perfect. Amanda, what about what gems have been hiding in the Habitat ReStore in Winona?
Probably my favorite item is, like Stacy, a couch, because it was upholstered in unicorns. And who doesn't secretly dream of having a unicorn couch? I didn't even know I had that dream until I saw it. So, yeah, it was really hard for me to let somebody else have that.
You had a unicorn couch-shaped hole in your heart that you didn't even know was there.
I didn't even know.
That's amazing. All right, we've been talking with various representatives from Habitat for Humanity here on Newsmakers today, the work that they're doing in our communities. And I'm sure if people aren't involved already, they might want to know how they can get in touch with the organizations to either donate a product or some funds, or to be of some assistance, get on a work team somehow. So we'll go around. Let's start with you, Amanda. Talk about how people can get in touch with Habitat there in Winona.
Thank you, Ezra. The best way to get in touch with us is just to go to our website, habitatwinona.org, and every single one of us is listed. So if you have a question that you're a little bit unsure where to start with, just call me personally. My cell phone is on the website, and I love to take calls of all kinds. You can also see how to get in touch with our ReStore. And then Jessie Darst is our wonderful community engagement coordinator. And she loves to bring people from all kinds of backgrounds into the work of Habitat for Humanity. So everyone who's out there and wants to get involved, there's a place for you with us.
And that's habitatwinona.org.
Yes.
All right. Stacy Palke, what about Adams County?
You can reach us through our website. It's habitat-ajc.org. Or visit our ReStore Tuesday through Saturday from 9 to 4 and call us at 608-847-2000. And one thing that's unique about our ReStore is we cover multiple counties. So multiple counties in your listening area. So we have Adams, Juneau, Green Lake, Marquette, Waushara, Wood, Monroe and part of Jackson County. We have an agreement with those other area habitats. So even if you're not from, you know, you're from that area and you want to be able to give back to your local habitat, the partnership is portion of the proceeds then go back to that area habitat. So, you know, it's right there on Highway 12 between Mauston and Linden Station, and come out and visit us.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot, Stacy. And Kaya, Habitat La Crosse, how can people get in touch, help out, visit the ReStore, and more?
Absolutely. So you can go to our website, obviously, at habitatlacrosse.org. Any question that you have or any interest you have, you can email us at info@habitatlacrosse.org. We actually also serve multiple counties. So we serve Vernon, Trempealeau, and La Crosse counties in Wisconsin, and also Houston County in Minnesota. So we offer free pickups in our service areas. So if you have a donation to the ReStore and have a little tiny Volkswagen Beetle and you can't get the couch in there, we'll come pick it up for free. And we actually have an online donation pickup service that you just click in where you are and your times, and we'll come by and pick that up. And I just wanted to do a shout out. April is actually National Volunteer Month. And so it's a huge way for us at Habitat to just kind of give a thank you to all our volunteers. Last year, we had 625 individuals donate over almost 14,000 volunteer hours. And habitats across the United States count on our volunteers. So a big shout out to everybody, you know, across the world who has given some time to Habitat for Humanity or other local charities. It's National Volunteer Month. So from habitats all over the world, thank you so much for everything that you do in our communities.
And that is a great note on which to close our conversation. We've been visiting with Kaya Fox, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity, La Crosse area, Stacy Palke, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity, Adams, Juneau County, and Amanda Hedlund, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity, Winona County, Minnesota. Remember, you can hear this conversation again or stream any of our previous episodes on demand. Just go to wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers, or find Newsmakers in your favorite podcasting app. Coming up, we'll talk to multidisciplinary artist Akiko Ostlund about her new work in progress. It's a theater piece called Racist Hotline, and that's next. We're back in just a minute. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio. Akiko Ostlund is a storyteller, a teacher of art, an activist, and much more than that, who's currently an artist in residence at Lanesboro Arts in Lanesboro, Minnesota. She's doing a lot while she's in Lanesboro, including presenting a work-in-progress show called Racist Hotline. I can't wait to hear about that because it's based on a radio show podcast thing, which is kind of what we're doing here, so that'll be interesting to hear about. Akiko Ostlund, welcome to Newsmakers. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today is Program Director for Lanesboro Arts, Melissa Ray. Melissa, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I read in the material that Melissa sent over about your residency, Akiko. I read that the theater piece is called a toy theater piece. What is toy theater? I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, toy theater is like pretty much a little box with a theater in it. And it's a classic puppetry form.
Oh, okay. So it's like a small puppet theater kind of thing.
Yeah. Pretty small. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about your piece uses puppets. When did you first get interested in puppetry in that way?
I never was interested. I was a dancer.
Okay.
But since Minneapolis is, you know, such a big puppet city, I just kind of like got sucked into it as a dancer first, and then start helping other puppeteers puppeting, and eventually start creating my own puppet shows.
The one that you're working on is called racist hotline, and it kind of takes place within a radio show, if I understand correctly. Tell me about Racist Hotline and how it's coming together.
Yeah, so that's kind of like you explained, it's like a podcast or like a live, you know, radio show. And you would see like my studio, and that's the visual. And then I would get a phone call from the listener who is white people who got canceled by, you know, whoever, or like being called racist, or got called out. And then they would call me and vent a little bit. And then I'm their favorite person of color who will just listen to them. And we just talk about racism.
It's interesting that this piece is sort of a work in progress. How do you know when it's finished, or is it ever really finished?
You never know. You never know when your piece is finished. But I'm definitely hoping to get, you know, like some of the feedback from people in Lanesboro, and then that gets included to the show. So if I can do that, then that's like one of the big goals.
So you've got this this very weighty, important topic, subject matter in this piece, and you're using puppets to tell these stories. And a lot of people are going to say, puppets? Well, I'm expecting a children's show when I hear about puppets. What's that like, incorporating puppets into something that is intended to carry some very mature subject matter?
I think, you know, puppets all over the world has been used as a tool to push back oppressive systems forever and ever. And if you see May Day Parade, a famous May Day Parade in Minneapolis, we make puppet, big puppet, and then kids, old people, you know, everybody comes out and carry those puppets on the street. And those are like, you know, symbolizes like a police brutality, or like, you know, pipeline, all those like a heavy, heavy political and social issues, you know. It's been kind of like, you know, puppetry has been used as a political tool.
Now, there are a lot of opportunities during your residence, Akiko, that people get to not just come and watch a show, but like interact with you. I mean, you're not just working on puppets. You're an art educator and have done real hands-on art with, you know, working with people, with members of the public. And I want to ask Melissa about the sort of the schedule coming up. What are some of those opportunities that people will have during Akiko's residency to participate with Lanesboro Arts?
Starting this Saturday, April 16th at 10 a.m., there's going to be a multimedia storytelling workshop that Akiko will lead in the St. Main Theater here in Lanesboro. And I think you can maybe fill in as you want, but I think that was more of a how to tell stories through these multimedia pieces and how to frame that story within an art piece. Is that right?
Yeah, we're just gonna have fun making puppets.
Okay.
And then there'll be another puppet making workshop on the April 24th, which is another Saturday, or sorry, a Sunday. And that's gonna be at Sylvan Brewing, which is our local brewery here in Lanesboro. So that's gonna be a fun public setting to have a beer and make some puppets. And and then in addition, there's two open studio sessions where anyone can come from the public, youth, adults, any age, and have an open studio session with Akiko. And that'll be two separate Saturdays, April 23rd and April 30th, both at 10 a.m. And then the final event, as you mentioned at the start of the show, will be this farewell potluck and work in progress showing of Racist Hotline. And that's going to be on Friday, May 6th at 6 p.m. And again, that'll be at the St. Main Theater.
So what goes on during an open studio opportunity? What is that? What happens in that situation?
I am curious about that too. Usually I will be making whatever, and then people stop by. Maybe we're going to have coffee together, and you know, maybe I'm going to ask them to help me out on certain things. Like, you know, if they know how to use super the glue gun, maybe I'm going to ask them to, you know, glue things together for me, or not. I don't know. Depending on who's going to come, and what's going to happen. So I just want people to like visit and then get to know each other.
So it's really an opportunity for people to kind of see your see what you're working on up close and maybe ask questions about it and just participate in a in an informal way.
Yeah, like informal and no agenda, unstructured time to get to know each other, because that's the reason why I'm here.
The piece that you're working on, the racist hotline piece, it looks at how racism is, according to what's published on the website, normalized in everyday life. So I'm interested in, like, what kind of examples of that are you trying to bring forward, and what's been your experience of that of sort of normalized racism?
A lot of people come reach out, you know, and then just so naturally, just like a white woman thing, you know, they will like reach out and then touch my hair, run their finger through my hair, and said, you know, you have a such a beautiful hair. And I'm sure they're doing it to kind of like a show friendliness, but it's just like not great feelings. And that happens all the time.
I'm surprised to hear that, but especially in recent years. Not just Asian women, but Black women and other others as well have commented on it so often about how inappropriate it is for people to like come up and touch their hair that I'm surprised there are people who don't know that. That still happens to you.
They didn't get the memo. And yeah, like in Minneapolis, even like it happens all the time. And yeah, those things, you know, like the microaggression, that is kind of like a mosquito bite. You know, it's not fatal, but when it like piles up, you just kind of like thinking about it all the time and then not feeling good.
For somebody who might find themselves in a situation where somebody's saying, hey, I wish you wouldn't do that. And their reaction to it is, I didn't mean anything by it, so it can't possibly be racist. How can you help people understand that even if they didn't mean anything by it, it might still be racist?
I don't know. It's a really, really difficult thing to dismantle defensiveness, because it's coming from fear, anxiety, and all those things, you know, like a learned behavior. That's a learned behavior that has a long, long history, you know? So I don't know. My hope is to, like, you know, use puppetry and just start thinking about that and keep on talking about that until we can normalize talking about racism all the time. We can normalize thinking about, you know, how certain things can be racist.
Do you think that putting those situations in the hands and in the mouths of puppets makes it easier to talk about, or maybe less threatening for people to hear about?
Definitely, like, easier to talk about, easier to, you know, discuss both people, both end. I've seen that a lot. Yeah.
So what are some of the other things that you're that the guests to your podcast bring up in your theatrical studio?
Well, just recent, you know, recent situation with COVID. And Asian people being, you know, called like, oh yeah, like go home if you, you know, go home with your disease or like whatever, whatever, right? And I would like to really, really talk about that and then see. I would like to examine all the disease that the colonizer brought here, and we don't call them colonizers disease or white virus, you know, we don't call it. So like, why are we calling HIV, you know, gay disease, Ebola, African disease, and COVID, you know, Asian disease.
Yeah, I think the former president referred to it even as the China virus, which...
Right.
Yeah. So these guests to your hotline, you said they're mostly white people. Like, are they reacting to people telling them that, oh, they're racist, so now they're going to call you and say, am I really being a racist? Or how is it that they come to call your show?
Well, you know, like, they want to vent and then they want to be comforted, I guess, you know, like, so, look, I was called racist by my son, but is it true that I'm like doing something, you know, racist? Like, am I racist? Am I over, you know? Yeah, like, they're just kind of like a calling to to, you know, like looking for a soft place to fall on. And they think like I'm, you know, I'm given that. And in a way I am, but we're going to talk about it, you know, and I'm not going to be just say, oh, don't worry about it. And forget about it. You know, it's his fault. I'm not going to say that. We're just going to like really talk about it and think about it together.
So the person that they're calling to talk to, you refer to it as you, but is it a puppet like representation of you, or is it like another character that you've created?
No, I do have like a picture or like a puppet that represents me. So yeah, it's supposedly like, you know, my podcast or radio show.
when you have events like this, whether on this subject matter or other subject matter, where people have the opportunity to come and interact on a real personal level with an artist like this and really be involved with their creative process, what do you hear back from the public after something like this? What's the response from presenting this kind of an opportunity in your community?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of people, artists who continue to come back even after their residency experience, and they build relationships and friendships with people here in Lanesboro, and that those, we have seen those continue. And I think the nice thing about these residency programs is that we are able to offer workshops. And so people start, you know, a lot of artists will come, local artists will come to these workshops and maybe expand their own art form, or maybe it's youth who come to these programs and get exposed to a new art form that they get to pursue and explore in their own time. And I think, you know, we just think that creativity and art can be a daily part of life, and that these types of programs where they have that specific relationship with an artist and they get to see an artist practicing their art form is just a really huge thing that, you know, as someone who grew up in a rural space in southeastern Minnesota, I didn't get access to as a young person. And I didn't know how you could do that in a rural space until I started seeing examples of that. So I think that, you know, those relationships through the residency program are really important for that.
Now, the weather's getting nicer and a lot more people are going to be headed your way. What else is going on through Lanesboro Arts this season?
Yes, in our gallery right now, we have an exhibition from the artist Amy Rice, who does a lot of printmaking and painting work. And so it's a beautiful exhibition. It's a lot of spring feelings and florals and animals in that exhibition right now. And we've gotten a lot of new work in the sales gallery itself. We are going to be ramping up for summer youth education programs soon. That'll start after school gets over in June. We've got a kind of operatic theater performance called Nadia that'll be coming on May 14th. So we've got a lot of things starting to ramp up, and we're just really excited to have Akiko here to offer these workshops throughout this next month or so here too.
So if people are interested in looking at the schedule for Akiko's residency or the upcoming events, where can they find out more about Lanesboro Arts?
Yes, you can find out more at our website, which is lanesboroarts.org. And yeah, you can stop on by anytime. Our gallery hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 5 right now. And so that's when you can view that exhibition space if you're interested in that. But yeah, come on by. We love having visitors.
Akiko, you're not only involved in this puppet theatrics that's going on in Lanesboro, you are a multifaceted artist with lots of different interests. Tell us what you're excited about being involved in the near future.
Yeah, so this summer, I'll be working with Minnesota Orchestra, and we're going to do a show together. So we're going to have a big puppet show while orchestra is playing music, and I'm really, really excited about that. And I don't know, I have a writing piece coming up in Minnesota Artist, MN Artist page that's run by Walker Art Center. And I don't know, there's a lot of things that I'm involved at the same time, but yeah, those are coming up.
And if people are interested in learning more about you and more about your art and more about your work, do you have a website or something that they can visit or a social media presence?
Yeah, I have Instagram. It's Akiko Aslan. That's my whole name plus one, number one. And they can just see what is happening.
Okay. And so just for people who might be wondering, it's Akiko Aslan 1 is how to find you on Instagram. Can you spell that for us?
Yeah, it's AKIKOOSTLUND.
One.
Yeah.
There we go. Perfect. Akiko Osland is, among many other things, artist in residence at the moment at Lanesboro Arts. Akiko, thank you very much for being on Newsmakers today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Certainly. And Melissa Ray is program director at Lanesboro Arts. Melissa, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's how you can listen to our show every week. We're on Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network, 90.3, and Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music, 88.9. And we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. For my producer, Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.